Welcome to Passive Real Estate Investing, the show where busy people like you learn how to build substantial passive income while creating wealth for the long term. And now, here's your host, Marco Santarelli.
Welcome to Passive Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Marco Santarelli. Well, I have an exciting show today. Why? I'm excited about the whole topic of taxes, not because I want to pay more taxes, but I'm always looking for strategies and ways to reduce my tax impact, whether I can defer, eliminate, whatever the case may be. We all should educate ourselves when it comes to taxes and how to be more efficient with our tax strategy so we can defer and eliminate taxes. So I have a very special guest today, someone who I've known for a number of years. His name is Brett Swartz, and Brett is a capital gains tax deferral expert, and he's also the founder and CEO of Capital Gains Tax Solutions. He's a sharp business person and an advisor, and a really good guy all around. Brett, welcome to the show.
Marco, thanks for having me. Excited to be back on the show.
Well, it's great to have you on. We're going to talk about something that I find exciting, and I hope people get excited about it as well, because let's face it, most people don't like to talk about taxes and tax strategy and whatnot. It's something that probably gives them a little bit of brain damage, but that's why you hire experts. But the important thing here, I think, for most people to understand is, what are the tools that we have out there that we may not even know about that we could use and implement in our investing strategy and in our business and whatever else we're doing that can eliminate, defer, and reduce our taxes? And that's exactly what I want to talk to you about today. But let's find out a little bit more about you and your company, Capital Gains Tax Solutions. Why don't you just share with our audience what that's all about?
Thanks, Marco. Yeah, so I grew up in the real estate business in the Bay Area with my mom and my dad, my brother, building custom homes and having rentals and cash flow. So I fell in love with real estate at a young age, had a chance to go to college and study and take an internship at a place called Marcus & Millichap, where I learned the brokerage side of and multifamily and underwriting side of things, and, you know, cap rates, cash flow, IRRs, you know, all of negotiations, structuring deals. And but it wasn't always that great. You know, in fact, 2006 was really good, and then it went really bad pretty fast by 08. And I went from making a little bit of money to like nothing overnight. And that began, oh my gosh, what am I going to do to help keep the lights on with my family, my wife at home with her new baby daughter at the time? Like, how are we going to keep this dream of being in commercial real estate alive? And so I did what every good entrepreneur, commercial real estate investor wannabe does, who wants to be full-time in it. You get a side hustle, right? And my side hustle was at Cheesecake Factory. And so nights and weekends, I worked at Cheesecake Factory. And by day, I'd make cold calls or negotiate with banks and try to help my clients solve problems. And that was my kind of my journey, if you will, of being in a season of life that says, do I really love commercial real estate? Do I really love solving problems for clients enough to push through the pain? And the pain on the other side is, you know, like anything, enough pressure and enough pain, it can create like that, the diamond, and the diamond being my business partners who are really, really smart, pressuring on me to become an expert in deferred sales trust and 1031 exchanges and help people to navigate the whole options, like what to do, what not to do. And I didn't know anything at the time, but in 09, my manager at Marcus & Millichap brought in my business partner who spoke on the deferred sales trust. And I started to apply it to my business. My business started to grow. Fast forward, I retired from the Cheesecake Factory. My wife and I have five kids. We live here in Sacramento, California. And I help people still do 1031 exchanges, but mostly I'm educating CPAs, financial advisors, commercial real estate syndicators, cryptocurrency experts on how to exit highly appreciated crypto real estate business primary homes, save a fail 1031 exchange using the deferred sales trust.
Beautiful answer. Okay, so let's start with the basics. I always like to start with the most simple of questions, and that is this. People are asking, what is a deferred sales trust? So can you explain that in plain English?
Yes, a deferred sales trust is just an installment sale. You might know it as a seller carryback. Whereas if Marco wanted to sell a cryptocurrency for $5 million to we'll use a real estate deal, apartment complex for $5 million, he could finance the buyer, right? He could finance all of the $5 million or just a portion of that. And to the extent he hasn't received any down payment, he's in a deferral state, okay? The difference is we form this trust separate from the buyer, initial buyer, and separate from you, and it's the third party that creates the magic, and that you sell your asset to the trust first, and then the trust sells it to the buyer, and the smoke clears, and you're left with a promissory note. So versus like a Delaware statutory trust or a 1031 exchange, when you're trading an apartment complex, let's say, for another apartment complex, and you're maintaining ownership, in this scenario, you've become the lender, But what's neat is you're not financing the buyer, and the cash has freedom, freedom to move into different deals at different times, in different product types, different asset classes, you know, doesn't matter the deal size, very flexible. So we help people execute that. Hopefully that answers the question, Marco.
Yeah, it does. So for clarity, and I'm going to kind of keep trying to dumb this down so people understand it with clarity. So rather than having a two-party transaction, you essentially have a three-party transaction, the third party being the trust. And that trust, I would assume, has a trustee that you appoint. So maybe talk about that before we go any further.
Yeah, and that's actually my role. So at Capital Gains Tax Solutions, we're a third-party, unrelated, deferred sales trust, exclusive trustee. And so we provide that service. It's not unlike an IRA company or a 401k company. It's kind of like a 1031 exchange accommodator. It's kind of like a lot of these different things, but I'm kind of like the custodian or the manager of the trust. I'm the actual trustee. So remember what's happening. You're trading your ownership of an asset to become a lender of an owner of a promissory note. And so you become the bank. And so the trust itself is owned by Capital Gains Tax Solutions, and it's operated by a trustee. Necessarily, just like a 1031 exchange accommodator is not owned by you, right? It can't be, because that would be constructive receipt. It's got to be third party. So that's how we keep the tax deferral intact.
So how much direction does the seller of the asset, be it real estate, crypto, a business, or whatever, what kind of control do they have and direction do they have with that trust? And I guess that would be through the trustee, but how much control do they have?
Yeah, great question. It's one of the most important questions. First of all, the funds never move without their approval. Their funds are never invested in any investment without their approval. Okay, so they've got to approve everything. And the analogy we use is kind of like a CEO, a COO, and a CFO. And there's these three parties. And you, let's say, Mark, it was your deal. You would be the CEO. I would be the COO, Chief Operating Officer. And there's a financial advisor, third party, that we work with across the nation. And they're the CFO. And collectively, we, our goal is to pay you back, let's say, that initial $5 million plus 8% over a period of time. And we got to bring investments. We've got to make investments decisions. But nothing will move without your approval. So you don't have unilateral control, is what we're used to as owners, meaning we can just click the buttons. We don't have to ask anyone's permission. We just go to, we can go do it. And here's the thing. If you had unilateral control, it'd be taxable. It's, in fact, that single point there which keeps the tax deferral. Again, not unlike a 1031 exchange. You got to work with an accommodator who's going to help you follow the rules and do all these different things to make sure that you're not in constructive receipt. So that's our role. So as a team, and I'm here, I'm a friendly trustee, right? I'm not here to say no unnecessarily. I'm here to say yes within the bounds of the guidelines which have been laid out by the tax attorney and CPA who created this. And we work as a team. And so day to day, it's something like this. The financial advisor says, hey, $5 million, Marco, what would you like to do? And you go, hey, you know, Brett, I like to invest in these, you know, fourplexes and the different rental properties out of state. You know, I'd like to do that by myself. In fact, can I do that? And the answer is yeah. In fact, up to 80% of the funds the next day can go to an LLC, which you are the owner and manager of, and you open up the bank account. And in partnership with the trust, it can fund your purchase of those properties. In fact, we just did a deal in Alabama for a client. He had a $2.6 million business sale, and he wanted to build 70 multifamily units with a partner. He's like, Brett, I don't necessarily want to get more debt of a bank. I don't necessarily want to bring in a partner. Can I partner with the trust? And so the answer was yeah. So he formed an LLC. The trust put up the funds, and the funds went into a bigger LLC, and they're building the project right now. In fact, they're selling out of a lot of the units right now, and they're rolling it back into the trust. And so these are all the little steps that we follow, but it's a team effort, right? And that's how that works.
So it sounds like there's a lot of creativity and flexibility in what you can do, because I would imagine that trying to do that in your example any other way with any other vehicle would be disallowed, because it wouldn't be looked at as an arm's length transaction.
Yeah, so a couple things. If you wanted to do a 1031 exchange, right, we call that blockbuster, and we'll talk about the arm's length transaction part in a minute, but if you even just try to do this even with like a charitable remainder trust, they're pretty much limited, generally speaking, to just like securities and very, very conservative, you know, funds that are not active real estate folks like we are. So with the deferred sales trust, it's very flexible with no timing restrictions. You know, you can dollar cost average into the stock market. You can dollar cost average into real estate deals. You can even go back into cryptocurrency if you sell out of cryptocurrency. There's a number of things that you can do. And yeah, the key is in partnership with the trust, not, you know, cashing out and paying the tax. And how do we structure that? And that's where our tax team, and that's where it's been through the audits and everything else, we help you perfect that. And so that's how we keep it from being non-arm's length.
Okay, so let me drill down to one thing here a little bit, because I would imagine some people are wondering how the promissory note piece works. So you conclude a sale, the buyer takes over the asset, the trust is holding the proceeds from that sale, correct?
Correct.
And you, as the original seller, are holding a promissory note with the trust.
Correct.
What kind of terms can you and can you not put in that promissory note so you can get an idea, or at least me asking the question, get an idea of what kind of benefits can I get from that sale so I know that I can either live off of it or reinvest it or do whatever I choose to do with it?
Great question. Before anything happens, by the way, you fill out what's called a risk tolerance questionnaire. And if you're married, your spouse will as well. And that determines how and where, part of how and where the funds are invested. And second, the interest rate of what's going to be owed back to you. So our notes are typically 6%, 7%, or 8%. Okay, compounding net of the recurring fees, which are about 1.5% to 2%, depending on how and where the funds are invested. Okay. And so net of that, we're going to try to earn that 8. Okay. That's the goal. Not a guarantee, not a promise. That's over a 10-year period is the general term. Okay. So now clients might take some payments. They may not take payments. You're in California. I'm in California. We might delay the payments for a few years or years and turn it on when it has a little more favorable for us so we can get some income tax deferral. We might move to Nevada and establish residency and then turn the payments on. There's some definitely flexibility, but at any given time, there is a promissory note of, let's say, $5 million set to pay you back at 8%, and a payout could be flexible. It could be a 5% to 6% payout. Now, the goal is to go make enough money where the trust is never dipping into that $5 million initial principal. That's the goal. And that's where most of our clients will just keep the entire amount deferred. So let's say it's a zero basis $5 million sale. So imagine it was cryptocurrency, Ethereum or Bitcoin or something else, and you would have paid about $1.85 million of tax instead of paying that all in the trust. And now it's invested in some different investments and those are producing cash flow, goes into the trust. Now, you may not take cash flow from the trust for a year or two, but if you start taking cash flow, you'll pay tax on that, right? If you dip into principal after extinguishing your interest rate, you'll pay some capital gains tax, but most will just live off interest-only payments. And then every 10 years, they'll renew for 10 years and we can pass it to your kids and keep it going.
Okay, that was a great example. I mean, obviously you made, you know, some assumptions as to what the asset was, what the sale price was, and what is left in the trust. So when you take those distributions, I guess the interest would be taxed as interest income at the personal level, the 1040 level. If you have distributions, you mentioned 5%, whatever that distribution is, how is that taxed? Is that taxed as interest or is that taxed as ordinary income or what is it?
Yeah, there's two levels of tax for the note holder you, and then we'll talk about the level of tax for the trust itself, okay? So
okay.
If you, most of our clients just take interest-only payments, so they never dip into that principal. If they were to dip into that principal, they'd pay capital gains tax, but most will take just interest-only payments, so that interest is accruing and it's paying out, okay? As it pays out, you'll get a 1099, right? And you'll report it as ordinary income tax, and you'll pay tax on that. Okay. To the extent that you don't have depreciation, you might have some depreciation that you built up somewhere else, right? You bought a new property or did some cost seg over there. And there might be a way, check with your CPA to wash some of that out in a given year, which is kind of nice. So that should answer the interest amount and then the principal amount. Now for the trust is really interesting, right? The trust operates in a very tax neutral state typically, meaning it might be earning 8 or 9%, 10%. But remember, it has expenses of about 2% per year. And then it also owes you about 8% per year. So even if you're not taking payments, it's able to expense what it owes to you and therefore often operate at a loss every single year. Because day one, it's compounding at 8%, right? And that thing is never stopping. And so the investments are trying to catch up. And oftentimes it just carries forward a loss every year and it just doesn't have to pay tax. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. So I'm going to go much deeper down the rabbit hole here with you on this next question. I'm sure this is pretty basic to you, but I'm learning as I'm listening, and I'm hoping, you know, my audience here is also learning from this as well. So let's just say, use your hypothetical example. Let's just say we sold our real estate or whatever asset, and now the trust is holding whatever, $5 million in your case, it could be $1 million. We're going to call that the principal. That was the net proceeds from the sale. Now, if we took those proceeds and invested those in another investment, it could be real estate, it could be whatever, and maybe that's in another entity. Let's use that as the example. So we're holding those new assets in another entity that I assume is owned by the trust, and the proceeds came from the trust. Is the income or profit from that new investment taxable, or is it not taxable because it's still in the trust? And if it is taxable, how is that taxed?
Okay, so let's take an active role, right? Let's imagine you put $5 million into the trust and you go buy a 15-unit apartment complex for $1 million in Florida, okay?
Okay.
You're like, I got a nice deal. And so step one, the $5 million in the trust, it's compounding at 8%. And step two is you form a brand new LLC the next day. Step three, you amend the operating agreement. It's a partnership agreement between you and the trust. And the trust puts up all $1 million. So Marco put up no money, but Marco is the majority owner of that LLC. Okay, $1 million, and you go and buy that property. Well, how is that structured with depreciation? To the extent that your ownership is in that LLC, you get the depreciation personally, which is awesome. Part of it is because you're the active owner, the sweat equity, you're the general partner, you're the managing member, you're doing the work. The trust is a silent equity partner that put the money in. It's going to ask for a preferred return, and we have a way that we structure this to make sure that it's all commercially reasonable and this business purpose and all these different things. But the end result is we get you as much upside as possible without having to put any of your money into the deal, right? Now, the $5 million is technically owed back to you, but it's the trust money that's, it's your money, but the trust owes it to you and it's in a deferral state. So it infuses the money into it. And when you see it broken down on these little boxes, it makes a lot of sense. But just think of it like a partner down the street. If you said, hey, I want to go buy a deal and I need an equity partner. Anyone have any money? And they're like, yeah, I got $1 million. Like, you could partner with that person and they could be a partner with you and do none of the work. You do all of the work and then you split the depreciation in accordance to your ownership. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And this is why at the very beginning I said there's a lot of ways to get creative with this. There's a lot of flexibility. I guess the important thing here is for people listening is to understand that the trust, you need to look at it as a third person. It may be your profit sitting in there, you know, your proceeds from your sale, but you treat that trust as if it's a separate person, another entity, and you have control over it.
Yeah, it's technically a business trust in which you're the secured lender, so nothing moves without your approval. And yes, you do have a level of control. You don't have unilateral control because that would be an ownership and be taxable, right? So just like a bank says, hey, Marco, I'll loan on your house. You own the house, Marco, but we're the lender. So you got to make sure you make the payments. You got to make sure you have fire insurance. You got to make sure you have this and this and this, whatever, right? Do all these things and we won't foreclose on you. So this is what's happening. Most people, the biggest thing to get over is they've never really been the lender before. So you got to realize that you're trading ownership hat for a lender hat, right? And you have secured lender control, which arguably is more power than even ownership. Like as a lender, you have all these rights, right? The richest people in the world are banks. So you're becoming a bank. But then the next best thing is the next day you can become an owner again by partnering with the trust. And that's why I started the company. If it wasn't for that reason, it would be kind of like a 3 or 4 out of 10, you know, it'd be cool and stuff. But the fact that you can go back into real estate and be an owner again, we call it lendership. You were a lender first and then you're an owner again and buy deals when it makes sense, right? And invest in hard money lending or crypto or stock market or never go into real estate ever again if you don't want to. That's where the magic is. That's where the power of the deferred sales trust is unlocked.
Okay, so let me throw this at you. Does it matter how the assets are held before the sale and before the trust is set up? Because some people hold real estate in their own name personally, which they probably shouldn't. Some people hold real estate or assets in an LLC or maybe even in another trust, but the assets are held in something or by somebody. Does it matter how those assets are held before you go and procure that sale and set up the trust?
Yeah, who does this work for and what's the best time? Let's talk about who does this work for. Who does the deferred sales trust work for? It really works for anyone who's selling an asset that's worth at least a $1 million net proceeds and a $1 million gain. It could be cryptocurrency, it could be business, it could be NFT, it could be an LP interest, it could be a GP, it could be LLC, it could be limited partnership.
Real estate.
It could be real estate, primary home, artwork, collectibles. Okay, there's really no like limit to that. Okay, A. B, timing is very important. We gotta make sure that we set up the trust prior to the close of escrow, which means you need to get with us early, ideally, right? Even prior to the buyer removing all contingencies. Unless you're in a 1031 exchange, then we can save a failed 1031 exchange. But here's the other thing, you wanna make sure that you're working with our accommodators that we strategically align with to make sure you have both options. So hopefully that answers the question, Marco.
Yeah, it does. Actually, that was gonna be one of my questions is who is it for? But I think you answered who it's not for. And I have to assume it's someone who's selling assets that are under $1 million. Is that kind of the cutoff?
Yeah, who is the deferred sales not for? So basically, if you don't have $1 million net proceeds or $1 million gain, or two assets at 500 each that can combine to hit that. So you could have $500,000 of crypto and a $500,000 duplex. You can combine it into one that you're going to be selling in a short period of time. That is who the deferred sales trust is for. Everyone else it really is for, as long as you don't want to spend the money right away on a primary home or a boat or personal use, you want to put it into a business and an investment. The deferred sales trust you might as well use, because you can defer all that tax and keep the money going for you.
So I'm curious, why is there that $1 million? Is that like an IRS related thing? What's the reason?
Let's say I've reviewed 1,000 deals over since 2009, just the 10,000 hour rule and all this stuff here, right? Honestly, we have found that if the pain's not big enough, Marco, then our cost of our fees and the setup and everything else, it just doesn't make sense. We want it to be a home run, a 10 out of 10 for all of our clients. Does that mean we haven't done deals at 800 or 700? Sure, right? Especially if they're in a higher tax state. But generally, like a California or New York, but generally speaking, we want $1 million net proceeds, $1 million gain on a per transaction basis. You might say, well, Brett, I have 20 cryptos in different coins that all add up to $1.5 million or $1 million. Can I still do it? Yeah, we would form an LLC. You would assign the crypto, the coins to that LLC. Then we would sell at that point, and that would be, we'd be able to do that kind of one transaction. Or if you had like 30 homes at $3 million, right? Where any individual one wouldn't work, but if you put it all into an LLC and sold it to one buyer, then it could work there too. So, but generally speaking, we want to make sure that the pain's big enough to match the value of the trust.
Okay. So we've talked about or mentioned 1031s multiple times here, and a lot of people listening to this are familiar with a 1031 tax deferred exchange. And we work with a lot of clients who are doing 1031 tax deferred exchange. How does this compare to a 1031? I know there are pros and cons, but maybe paint the picture so people understand what the differences are, how it compares, and when they actually should be using a 1031 exchange.
Yeah, so why use a 1031 exchange versus why use the deferred sales trust? Like, what's the best thing to do there? So we found that the 1031 exchange, first of all, is a continuity strategy. And what that means is you're trading one asset for another, whereas the deferred sales trust is truly exiting that position. And when you exit that position, you are becoming the lender, right? So that's the first thing to understand. So one's an exit plan, the other one's a continuation plan. They both provide capital gains tax deferral. The 1031 gives you an old depreciation schedule, which is not good because your old depreciation schedule travels, right? And depreciation is one of the number one reasons to own real estate, because it offsets the income. The deferred sales trust gives you a new depreciation schedule if you're active and partnering with the trust, which is better, right? The 1031 exchange, we call it the shotgun wedding. You got to get engaged in 45 days, married in 180. Whereas the deferred sales trust, there's no timing restrictions. You can dollar cost average and go in whenever you want. You can truly sell high and buy low, right? The 1031 exchange doesn't deal with estate tax challenges. In other words, you get a stepped up basis. However, that only deals with capital gains tax. Whereas the deferred sales trust, you can move funds outside your taxable estate. So for the ultra high net worth, you can save 40%. Those are the main ones. Oh, the other one would be income tax deferral. The deferred sales trust can defer income tax. You can delay payments. Whereas if you're in a 1031, you're having to receive cash flow. And to the extent that you don't have any depreciation, you're just paying tax. And so we always like to say, just draw a line down the middle of a piece of paper, find out what your goals are, and then figure out what you want to do. Some of our clients, though, a lot of them are baby boomers, Marco, and they're just like, you know what? Why would a baby boomer want to use the deferred sales trust? Well, they're tired of the toilets, trash, and liability. They're tired of the phone calls. In fact, we just closed a deal in Arizona for $2.25 million, a multifamily owner, student housing in Tucson, Arizona. He's like, Brett, I get calls all the time for random stuff. He goes, you know, the reason I really like the deferred sales trust is A, I don't have to start over with new toilets, new trash, new liability. B, I don't have to overpay for property. But more than anything, like, I'm just ready to be done. I just want conservative, put me in the biggest companies in the world, in the stock market. I'm fine with that. Like, just conservatives, give me my payments. I don't need to go make another couple million. I just want to make sure that I have preservation and I get cash flow and I have time and energy with my family for the years that I have left. And so that would be some of the main differences, Marco.
All right, so since we're talking about comparisons here, let's do one more comparison. I think this is one that probably confuses people because they've heard of something called a DST, which is the same acronym as the Deferred Sales Trust, but it's referred to as a Delaware Statutory Trust. And there's got to be a percentage of people who get confused between the two because they share the same acronym and they're both trusts. So how do those two compare?
It happens all the time, right? You go to your CPA or your 1031 company or your broker, like, hey, you know DST? And they're like, oh yeah, I know DST. But what they're talking about likely is a Delaware statutory trust, which is just another form of a 1031. It's just like the cousin to a 1031. It's a 1031. It's what it is. A better name for it would be a Delaware 1031. Basically, in that scenario, you can sell your property, investment property. Remember, investment property too only works for, or 1031 only works for investment property. Doesn't work for primary home, cryptocurrency, a business sale, stock. Deferred sales trust works for all of those assets, including investment property. But what you're doing is you're selling an asset, a real estate property, investment property, and you're moving the equity via a Delaware statutory trust into an interest of a bigger portfolio of property. It could be one or two or three or more than that. But essentially, you are 1031ing into like a fund, but it's not a fund. It's really, it's actually properties that someone's managing. The downsides to it is you give up all control. You give up all liquidity, you give up all diversification, you're tied in for 7 to 10 years, huge fees. And by the way, I was securities licensed and I did a couple of these in the past, and they still have their good positives. Their positives are class A operators, class A locations, you know, beautiful properties. You don't have to worry about the toilet trash liability anymore. It's non-recourse debt. So it has a lot of really good things for people who are 100% want to be in real estate. But the biggest thing for our entrepreneur, real estate, you know, smart crypto clients, all of us, we want to sell high and buy low. We don't want to sell high, give up all control, all liquidity, huge fees, by the way, as much as, need to ask in this, of every dollar I put into this Delaware deal, how much is actually hitting the real estate? And I've heard, generally speaking, like 85 cents on the dollar is hitting the real estate. There's like 15 cents of every dollar is actually going to all these fees. And so you got to be very careful with what you're getting into, right? And also, clients want to be able to buy a deal when they see a deal, right? Like, Marco, that's why we're in the game of real estate. Like, we want to be able to execute. But if all my funds are tied up with somebody else I have no control over, how do I do that? You don't. You have to just wait. And that's where we don't really like Delawares unless they're replacing debt over basis, which is another scenario where the deferred sales trust cannot solve. That's where we use the Delaware to do a partial replacement of the debt. It's a partial 1031. We call it a bifracture 1031. And then the rest of it goes into the deferred sales trust.
So when we talk about a deferred sales trust, I mean, I'm kind of focusing on the word deferred. Is there a defined period of time that the trust has to hold the funds or distribute all the funds, kind of like a retirement account? Are there time limits or time restrictions with anything related to the deferred sales trust?
No. So there's, because there's no 45-180 requirements, right? I mean, I had clients sit during the COVID-19 crash, right? And everything waiting along. I had them sitting in the bank and just waiting for the market to shift and ideal for them to feel comfortable, right? And we just sat and waited and were patient. So there's no time restriction. The only downside would be inflation starts to eat up your dollar and that 8% is compounding. And you know, the money doesn't come out of thin air. We got to go invest it and make money, right? Otherwise we're eating up into the principal, right? And so there's that, you know, invest it when it makes sense, when it's suitable, all of those things that we help to build the team to execute.
Okay. All right. So since we're on the topic in terms of limitations or restrictions, are there any other limitations or restrictions related to the deferred sales trust?
None I can think of right now. No.
Okay. So I'm trying to think of, there's so many benefits to this. I mean, I don't want to say it sounds too good to be true because I know it's true. What downsides would you say there are with a deferred sales trust? And maybe that question should be phrased in a different way. When should you not use it? But you could either, you can answer both.
Yeah, when should you not use the deferred sales trust? I mean, so first one would be your liability is too small, right? So we touched on that. That's why we want $1 million net proceeds, $1 million gain per transaction, unless you have two or more at 500 each, or two at 500 each, not any more than that. And that means you pay your tax. There's definitely different times where we talk to people and say, just do an opportunity zone if you can find one. That makes sense. Just do a 1031 if you can find one that makes sense. But we don't want you to do a too small of a deal, not have enough tax liability to offset the fees that make sense of this, okay? So that's usually the first time. You know, you want to know that the bank, the financial advisor, the tax attorney, the law firm, the trustee, you want to get to know us, right? You want to get comfortable with us. You want to hear from our clients. A lot of times, Marco, people are learning about this and it's, you know, 15 days before they close and they're closing their largest transaction they've ever done. And emotionally, it's like, it's a lot on their shoulders. Their CPA has already told them, who's been advising them for 20 years, that they're going to have to pay the tax. In their mind, they've already paid it. And they look up on, find us on YouTube or listen to a podcast like this. And all of a sudden their whole world's like thrown out of kilter. And then they go to their CPA and their CPA is like, well, I've never heard of it. I heard of Delawares, but I probably wouldn't do it. because the CPA has no upside to say yes. And so it's that CPA saying no. And you have to be willing to, like, I don't say fire your CPA, but just say, you know what, CPA, agree to disagree. There's some really smart CPAs, tax attorneys over here that have done this for 25 years, thousands of closes, billions under management. It's faced the IRS over a dozen times, all no change audits. And I'm going to trust them on this because they're the brain specialists on this. You've been my general practitioner doing my blood work my whole life and taking care of me. But now for brain surgery, you're not the guy, right? And they got to be willing to do that. Now, the better way to approach it is to say, bring the CPA in, bring all the people to the table and let us all do no cost, no obligation due diligence, sit around and talk and bring up their objections or their thoughts. Now, 9 out of 10 times, Marco, to be honest, they join us. They're thanking their client for introducing us to them, right? And they're bringing more referrals to us. But we don't give our secrets away, right? We have everyone sign NDAs. We're very cooperative. We don't want to replace your CPA. Keep your CPA for all your personal tax returns. The deferred sales trust is separate, right? And we will report to your CPA what you get the income off of that. So that's usually the biggest thing. It's just people aren't either planning, they're not pre-planning, and they don't have time to get to know us in time. But honestly, now that we have so much content, that's less and less these days. Like, people are hearing about us. They're joining our mastermind. It happens every Friday. It's free at 10 a.m. PST. And they can learn and talk to clients. And stuff's on the internet now, right? I mean, this is there. They just have to do the homework and get comfortable with it.
Sure. Probably my last question is leverage. I know that with mortgage lending, it's hard to get financing if you have real estate in an entity already, unless it's commercial. Are there any rules or regulations or restrictions about leveraging the principal in the trust to acquire additional assets, whether it be real estate, crypto, businesses, whatever else it might be?
Yeah, good question. So the trust can partner with you into an LLC and go buy a property or build apartments or whatever. And to the extent that you can get financing, you know, your credit, your track record, all those things they're going to look at. They're going to look at the trust as a silent partner. Some banks might want certain percentages inside of the LP or inside of the GP, right? So there's kind of each deal specific. So I think that answers that. You cannot, like, just use it as a loan to go fund your personal use. That's a taxable event. That's constructive receipt. So it's got to be legitimately joint venture partnership with you on that next deal. I know banks do like to see the interest accruing and then the interest paying out as well. And you get a 1099, you report that on your tax return, and it's the monthly statement there that's coming into your personal bank account. I had some clients who sold a $1.4 million commercial property in Walnut Creek, and they bought a $1.2 million condo in San Luis Obispo, and that's part of it. They were trying to get that loan. They hadn't turned on the payments yet, and so we readjusted the promissory note to turn the payments on, and they started taking payments out of the trust to qualify for the loan on the property. And then later on, once they close on the property, we can adjust the payments to make them go back down again. So it's really flexible, but it's deal specific. And that's where we come in and we guide you every step of the way.
Okay, so I have a follow-up question to that then. Can the investment made using the principal within the trust, can that be equity and debt, or does it have to be equity, like a down payment or purchase on whatever the new investment is, the other assets?
Yeah, we've had clients do both, right? Some people buy it all cash, and then they go and they do value add and they refinance and then pay the trust back. Some people use it as a down payment and then get debt on the side too. So it's a mix.
So you're okay issuing a loan from the trust, using the principal, and having a promissory note set up where that new investment is repaying that note back to the trust?
No. So I think that, yeah. So if you're in the business of doing, like, hard money lending loans, and you send a funds to an LLC that does business loans to different individuals, not a personal use stuff, that's okay. But you're not going to use the trust as collateral to secure something else, right? That can be taxable. It needs to be a joint venture partnership with you into a business deal. So yeah, that is a limitation for sure, what you're saying.
Okay. All right. Well, what did I not ask you about DSTs that I should have asked you? Because obviously for me and a lot of people, this is a newer tax strategy.
Yeah, I would just say the cryptocurrency. I think that's the number one opportunity for folks who want to exit crypto and get into some more active or passive real estate deals, get some cash flow, get some tax flow going for you so that you can get some depreciation to offset some of that cash flow. and then being able to sell high and buy low, buy back crypto low, buy real estate low, do all of these things. And it's like riding a bike, right? Like it does take some time to get to know us and ride this bike. And it's always going to be wobbly. The first time you did a syndication or you did an apartment complex remodel or you bought cryptocurrency, like it was shaky, but we're going to guide you and you're going to get on the bike. And before you know it, you're going to be racing down with us, or, you know, 100 miles an hour. It takes some time, but you'll be there with us. But we do it all at no charge, no obligation, due diligence. So join us, join the movement, right, of Capital Gains Tax Nation, helping you to defer tax or helping your clients do the same.
Okay. Well, on that note, tell our listeners how they can find you and get more information.
Yeah, I want to pitch my book here. It's coming out here in the next 30 days, The Building a Tax-Deferred Exit Strategy. You can go to capitalgainstaxsolutions.com and look for this on Amazon as well. We have some cool people in here like Kevin Harrington from Shark Tank and a number of other folks. And it's going to talk about and give you the proven playbook for unlocking your ideal wealth plan when selling assets of any kind for yourself or your clients. You can also search us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram. Just look up Capital Gains Tax Solutions, Twitter, all of those places. And then join our mastermind by going to capitalgainstaxsolutions.com. It's every Friday, 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, 1 p.m. Eastern.
Cool. Brett, thank you for taking the time today. This has been enlightening and certainly an eye-opener for a lot of people. So thank you for your time.
My pleasure. Thanks, Marco.
Sounds good. And for everybody else, thank you for joining us today. Remember to subscribe. It only takes 1 second. Just click the button. Help us spread the word. Share the show with friends and other like-minded individuals. Thank you for listening, and we will see you all on our next episode.
Are you looking for a roadmap to financial freedom? If so, we have a solution for you. Narada Real Estate is offering a limited number of free strategy sessions to help you get out of the rat race. Learn how you can create wealth and build monthly passive income. To set up a time with one of our knowledgeable investment counselors, simply go to naradarealestate.com. That's NORADA realestate.com. Nothing on this show should be considered specific personal or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate legal, tax, real estate, or business professional for individualized advice. For distribution or publication rights and media interviews, please contact the host.